The White Glove Guys.
Previously
on the Darren Smith Show.
I mean, I've never seen a runner fall down rounding third in a spot that important. That was the first time ever that two errors were made on one play that led to a walk-off loss in a World Series game. That had never happened before. Brett Phillips' last RBI was on July the 27th, and he drove in a run, the biggest run of his entire life, in his third career postseason at bat.
Welcome to the Darren Smith Show.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back.
Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
Ooh, yeah.
Now, here's Darren.
We love you. We love you forever and ever.
On Extra 1360.
Hey there. Greetings to you. It is a Tuesday. It's the 27th day of October for 2020. I am Darren Smith, and you are listening to Extra 1360. It is the name of our radio station. It is the AM frequency. It used to be the only place that you could find. This programming here was available on 1360 AM, but no, we give you many, many ways that you can listen to this show and all the shows here on this radio station, including on the FM band at 103.3. You can find us on HD Radio at 101.5 FM, channel number 2. You can find us on the iHeartRadio app, which is a free app. It allows you to listen to us wherever, however, stream us through speakers as you're cruising around town in your automobile, your bicycle, or what have you, your headphones. You can listen to us whenever via the iHeartRadio app. It allows you to auto-download this show so you can listen on your time. SportsSD.com, that's our website. Smart speakers, Siri, and Alexa can stream us as well. I was just reading all about the connected homes, about the smart speakers that more and more people have in life now, and especially younger people, man. They're just like carrying on full-blown relationships with some of these smart speakers. So you better be available on those platforms here, especially in 2020, heading into 2021. We have a three-hour show today. For the 144th time, we are outside of the iHeart Studios. We had one show that broke our streak. It was a week ago today when we had all hell break loose inside of our remote broadcast situation and had to haul into the studios. Today, we have everything working. Everything is functional. Knock on wood, we will set you up here for 3 hours. We have four guests lined up for you today. We're going to talk some baseball. We're going to talk some football. We're going to talk a little bit of college football as well. We're going to get you set a week before what is called Election Day, although that's a little bit of a misnomer this year in that it is Election Day today. It was Election Day yesterday, but the deadline for voting is coming up in about a week's time. So Scott Lewis will join us, as he has all throughout the pandemic. So we are packed, including a couple of guests who just will make me happy today, which is really the name of the game, including Scott Hansen. Yesterday, as we are in the political season, and this is something Jack Cronin and I deal a lot with over on News Radio 600 KOGO, we have to offer equal time for candidates. At least in federal races, you do. That's the law. You don't have to do that on local elections, local races, et cetera. So you get two people who are running for San Diego City Council. It doesn't matter how much time. We try to be fair. We try to give everybody an equal amount of time here in preparation and anticipation of the election. But when it comes to federal races, you got to give everybody equal time. It's the law. It's the way it goes. We are not bound by that here necessarily, but morally we feel obligated after 10, 12 minutes with Andrew Siciliano yesterday, who is the NFL Network host, who is an NFL Red Zone channel host if you get DirecTV. Today, in the interest of equal time, because we're very fair people in this political season, Scott Hansen. Now, I don't know. I have no idea. For those of you out there who are listening, who consumes what at a higher rate? In other words, are more of you watching Scott Hansen or are more of you watching Andrew Siciliano? Of course, if you're watching NFL Red Zone. Now, you know, for somebody like the person who's sitting across the table from me, she's left out of this conversation. She's just completely left out of the conversation. So good afternoon, Marty Caswell.
What?
Martha, what's going
what's
on?
What's up, Darren?
The answer for you is none of the above.
Well, the answer for me is
I sit here
like,
and I'm at the mercy of whatever Kyle Kraska puts on my television.
Ian Eagle or Kevin Harlan
or Charles Davis or Kevin Burkhart. That's what I get. I get people from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
You get them on the red zone too, by the way.
Hey.
Sorry.
What did he say?
Nobody said anything to you.
What?
So I don't know what more people are watching here. If you're a Red Zone watcher, are you a DirecTV watcher, or are you a cable television, YouTube TV, Scott Hansen type? I really don't know. And I always feel bad saying this. I'm a little bit conflicted because Andrew Siciliano is a personal friend. Scott Hansen, I've only met a couple of times in life, and he's great. He's great. Like, I mean, he's great on television. He's also great in person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we met him at the Houston Super Bowl. He felt so bad for us because it was right after the Chargers had decided to leave. Like, he was hugging us. Like, he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, we were in a bar. We were Craig Biggio's bar in a hotel across the street from the convention center, which is where Radio Row was, when we went to Houston for the Super Bowl. Scott Hansen was like, oh. Like, he was saying goodbye to us. Like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but
like,
to be fair, it wasn't just Scott Hansen. It was, like, literally everyone that we met on Radio Row was giving us the condolences.
No. This was in a bar, though. Not Radio Row. What are you talking about? We're talking about when we were in the bar with Scott Hansen. Mm. He's very affectionate. He's just very, I love him. I really, really do. I've only met him one time, but he's going to join the show coming up a little later on. And I will tell you, just even seeing Scott Hansen's name on our show rundown puts a smile on my face because he is the absolute most redeeming quality of the NFL for me. He represents everything that is good about the NFL. So Scott Hansen guy.
So you're saying that Daniel Jeremiah does not make you happy, does not bring a smile to your face when you see his name on the rundown. You're saying that Scott Lewis, voice of San Diego, the man who wants to just banish plexiglass, he does not make you happy when you see his name on the rundown?
I didn't say other people didn't make me happy. I'm saying that Scott Hansen makes me happiest.
He makes you giddy.
He does. I really do.
Glowing,
man.
Derek.
I do. I really, really like this guy. Again, and I'm inwardly conflicted because, I love Andrew. You know, Andrew's a friend. I've known Andrew for 20 years.
I don't remember you being like this yesterday.
I don't really. Well, you know, listen, you also sprung that on me at about 12:15, so I had no time to prepare for it. Whereas at least last night, I knew that Scott Hansen was coming on the show, so I had plenty of time to gear myself up for it. So I'm super excited about that. He will join us coming up a little later on, and we will talk to him about what Andrew Siciliano refused to acknowledge yesterday, which is the significance of the witching hour. I could tell that we were entering a space that Andrew really wasn't all that comfortable with because that's Hansen's thing. See, there are two different red zones. Everybody knows this, right? There's the DirecTV red zone, Andrew Siciliano, and then there is the cable television, YouTube TV, I guess the streaming service red zone, which is hosted by Scott Hansen. And he uses a term called the witching hour, which is, in my understanding, about 12:30, 12:45 until the end of the 1 o'clock games.
Ah.
And this past weekend, I don't know that Scott will or won't agree, like this was the best witching hour of the year because you know, you had Cleveland and Cincinnati, you had Pittsburgh and Tennessee, you had Atlanta and Detroit, you had Carolina, which was lining up for a field goal against New Orleans where it could have, I think, tied the game or won the game outright. I think it was tied the game. But you know, you had all of this sort of chaos happening and it was easily the best witching hour of the 2020 season. I don't know where this would stack up historically to other great witching hours over the, decade plus that Scott Hansen's been doing this, but it was a good one. It was a really, really good one. So, and Andrew didn't want to play around. It's not his thing. It's not his term. So he's not really into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we respect that. So we didn't push it with Andrew. But today we get Hansen. And yeah, it's really, really good news for any of us who spend our Sundays with this guy because we feel like he's part of the family. Now, hello, Jim Russell.
This is Jim.
Hello, Darren.
So, I mean, am I alone in this? Because I feel like, you know, Marty has no interest in this. She doesn't get red zone. She doesn't understand the connection that many of us have watching on Sundays, even those of us who don't really even like the NFL.
Well, I'm going to maybe get it soon. Like, maybe this week I will.
That's
maybe
no.
This week. This is the week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and nobody would bet on that
now. Absolutely. Sure.
I'm going to get it this week. You either get it or you don't get it. But am I wrong? Am I alone in this, Jim? I mean, I feel like you might understand a little bit because you probably spend 7 hours of uninterrupted football each and every Sunday with Scott Hansen, right? Isn't that what he says every single Sunday at 10:01 a.m.?
The only time when I don't watch Red Zone is when the Niners are on. My full focus
is
on
like
the Niner
no
game.
Way
but
yeah.
If there's no Niner game on, it's Red Zone or bust for me. Like, there's no other option. Because you get all the announcers on the Red Zone. You're just not stuck with one Ian Eagle or whoever it is on
stuck.
One show. Well, you're saying you're only going to listen to one crew on the Red Zone. You get to listen to all the crews.
No, I flip back and forth. I might go back and forth from CBS to
But
to
sometimes
Fox.
There's only and one like, game like on this, CBS and Fox.
Like this weekend. This weekend, I think Jim Rosa won't be watching it because the 49ers are playing the Seahawks. Pretty tasty game in the afternoon.
Well, listen, I'm not attached to any team the way Jim Russell hates watching the Niners each and every week. So I'm at complete liberty to sit there and sit there watching on one television and flipping open a soccer match on a different one and watching a fantasy team on a third one. So, you know, that's usually the way it rolls for me on a Sunday. And I will tell you, it becomes quite addictive. So even just as I said, with respect to Scott Lewis, with respect to Daniel Jeremiah, with respect to Dan Shulman, who will come up here in a little bit, who will join us at the bottom of the hour, since we're carrying Game 6 of the World Series. If you're listening today, just past 5 o'clock, you'll hear Dan Shulman calling the game on ESPN. We're carrying that game. I love all of them. All of them make me happy today, but there is something about Hansen that just puts a smile on my face. And I don't think I'm alone in this regard. At any rate, I realize this might have gotten a little weird for some people, so we'll just move on. Scott Hansen will be here a little later. You can text us, 70470, first word of the text, XTRA. So, speaking of, Dan Shulman will join us coming up here in a little bit. He is working with Jessica Mendoza and Chris Singleton. This is the national broadcast. The Dodgers now, game 6. They're up 3-2. Let's just put it out there. Let's not waste any time. Who you got? Who you got tonight? It's Tony Gonsolin, who I will tell you, didn't know much about Tony Gonsolin before he pitched at Petco Park late in the season. It was the third game of a 3-game series. We thought that that series was more meaningful after the first game. That was the game where Trent Grisham took Clayton Kershaw deep. And then for whatever reason, everybody just decided that they were not interested in playing the series anymore. It was just one of the more bizarre moments of the 2020 season. So Tony Gonsolin ended up pitching, I believe, game 3 of that series. Started it. Don't know if he finished it. They do a lot of weird things. By weird, I just mean unconventional. I will tell you, as somebody who is a cat owner, as somebody who loves cats, I find the Gonsolin stuff a little bit creepy. When they show him like licking the back of his hand and putting his hair behind his ears, like as if he's a cat. Like, okay, dude, we get it. Like, you know, I love cats too, but I'm not going to put myself out there like that. So it's a little bit of a turnoff for me. And he seems to be shrinking as the postseason goes on. He was okay, and every game gets shorter and shorter and shorter, which culminated with him game 2 lasting an inning and a third. This is the game, if you'll remember, where I said, I mean, I'm not here for this. And I tapped out game 2 of the World Series this year because I wasn't in the mood to watch Dave Roberts go out to the mound 40 times in a World Series game, making pitching change after pitching change after pitching change. On the opposite side, it is Blake Snell, who is, I believe, yes, the reigning Cy Young Award winner for the American League, who was great through 4 innings, and then he got out of there with a quickness.
He won 2 years ago.
Wasn't it 2019?
Verlander won last year.
Okay. He won 2 years ago. I thought it was 19. It's 18. Thank you very much for correcting me. I also would like to correct myself. I said yesterday that the Pac-12 would be playing this weekend. It's actually November 7th, so let me clean up all my mistakes. Who you got? Who you like? Dodgers going to win tonight? I mean, let's not talk about the series. Let's just talk about tonight.
I think
tonight
they're going to. I think they'll figure out a way to finish it tonight. I know that yesterday both you and Tim Kirchen were on the same page, saying that in Game 6 with Gonsolin, that the advantage goes back to the Rays with their bullpen and with a better starter. I just think that I think the Dodgers' offense is too good, and they've had enough. And I think they finish it tonight. I know that he is not going to be like the opener, Gonsolin. He's the actual true starter. You get, 3 decent innings from him, well-rested bullpen.
Three innings?
You can get 3 innings from that guy.
Three innings.
3 innings, you have a rested bullpen.
Three? Yeah. I mean, that's like unheard of here. Listen, in this postseason. What are you talking about, 3 innings?
I know
what they say, too. Well, he's not going to be an opener for us. Well, then what was that in game 2?
Why
would you change your approach from game 2 to game 6? Was he on pitch count? I mean, I don't know. Dan Shulman will have to explain that. So you think this is going to end tonight?
I think it ends
over.
Yep.
The Dodgers drought ends. First time since 1988. Much to the chagrin of many people who are listening to the show right now, but you are fair and you are honest, and you think that this ends tonight.
I do.
That they will have enough of a bullpen presence. Gonsolin, and then who knows what? Maybe Dustin May?
Sure.
3 innings. You really think he can give you 3?
No.
I don't know. He doesn't seem to. He seems to be going in the wrong direction for that. I can't quite put my fingers on this. Hopefully Dan Shulman can come in up at the bottom of the
hour. Have you seen anything from this Rays offense consistently to make you think they can figure it out in this game?
I mean, listen, they've hit a handful of home runs here. I mean, they're behind in every offensive statistical category to the Dodgers, but they're not far behind. No, they're not. I think they're four home runs behind. Yeah, they can. Yeah, I mean, this Lau who woke up suddenly, he's hit a couple of home runs. So, no, I mean, over the span of 162, absolutely not. But given even last year's World Series, you might remember I was in attendance for Game 6. That was a 3-2 advantage for the Astros, who ended up losing 6-7. So the Dodgers were once upon a time up 3-2. These things happen. I know it often feels like whoever won the previous game is on its way to surefire victory, but we've seen, I think I would rather be the Rays tonight pitching than I would be the Dodgers. That's just me. Again, some of this I think is a little bit of the weirdness of this Tony Gonsolin guy that Fox insists on putting up there on our television. It's just as weird. Again, and I say that as somebody who's very, very feline friendly, but
a little bit strange.
I do. I don't know. Very flaky. So you think it's over tonight? Jim Russell, host of the wrap-up show. What do you think?
I'm going with the Rays. I think that it's going to go 7. I think the bullpen game for the Dodgers, I think the Dodgers are going to eventually win in Game 7 because I think Walker Buehler's been the best pitcher for them all postseason, but I do think tonight they'll get to the bullpen for the Dodgers.
Okay. Now, do you believe that, or are you pandering here? What do you do?
I don't think he believes.
I don't believe
super
it
pandering.
At all.
You don't even believe.
Hell no.
I mean, we called that bluff. If we were sitting around a poker table, we would all have Jim Russell's money right now because he doesn't believe that. So you're playing that. Yeah, you're trying. You actually think it's over.
Yeah, it's over. It's so over.
Look at you two guys. What did Blake Snell ever do to you two? Now, Blake Snell can't turn over a lineup for a third time, but we saw two sevens in the league championship series, right? We saw the Dodgers come roaring back. They were trailing 3-1, and they force a game 7. And then we saw the opposite, where the Tampa Rays were up big. They were up 3-0, and they ended up playing in a game 7. So why not have another game 7? It just feels like it's sort of going that way. Now, this is where I remain a bit conflicted, because I will be the ultimate hedge here, in that I said when the series started, I thought Dodgers 5 or 6. We don't do a ton of predictions here because the one thing I've learned 20 plus years in this business, I'm really not very good at predicting the future. Really not very good at it at all. Like, really bad. And if I have money attached to it, I'm even worse. So that's why I don't get involved with that either. But I thought 5 or 6 for the Dodgers. Now we're looking at a 6, so I could certainly hedge and say, well, you know, I could get this both ways, and tomorrow I could show up here, and if it's the Dodgers, I could say, well, I sort of thought this was a bad matchup. But why not? I mean, why not? Game 7s are fun, and I would love to see one in this series. I think it'd be really, really good on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, I agree with you.
To have a game number 7 with Walker Buehler, who knows what the Dodgers are willing to do tonight?
I'd much rather
in terms of what pitchers
like
they're willing
that
to take out and bring in and do they play for 7? Are they operating with the philosophy of we have 2 games to win 1? Because that might get them in a little bit of trouble, right? Like that might get them in a little bit of trouble here if they start thinking, well, okay, we'll start moving this guy for tomorrow and we'll save because Buehler and he's got a blister. And if they were down 3-2, would they be pitching Buehler tonight? Or would you trust your entire season to Tony Gonsolin
Buehler
and his weird cat fetish?
If they were down 3-2, I think you go Buehler tonight. And you're right. I have absolutely no idea. I think 3 innings would be like, I mean, just your wildest dreams.
Oh, my goodness.
Because you're right. Let's see. 88 pitches in game 2 of the NLCS, 41 pitches in game 7, 29 pitches in game 2. So he's gone from 88 to 41 to 29. So, right, he is not trending in the right direction. So why I'm thinking...
So tonight he's probably going to give you 9. Not
exactly.
Innings, pitches.
Right. Oh, yeah. I don't even know.
I don't know either. I really, really don't. I have no idea what to expect. It sort of feels like the way the LCS has went, though. It gives you a good reason to think that this will get stretched out for one more night. But it would not surprise anybody if the Dodgers were to win this one. And part of this is I would love to see them have to play a game 7. You know, I would love to see, with all the pressure in the world on the Dodgers, I would love to see them tomorrow with Walker Buehler. How do they use Julio Urias here over the next couple of days? Is he available tonight? And do you go all in trying to win this one tonight? Do you save a little something just in case there's a seven, which could totally backfire on you? But how could you not? How could you not operate with the philosophy of, well, we have two games in order for us to win one to win a championship? You have to let that factor in some capacity. But if you're in the sixth inning tonight and you'll be in the bullpen, there's no doubt about it. Would you go with Urias? I mean, who knows? Maybe Dan Shulman will know the answers. Also, Daniel Jeremiah will join us coming up at the top of hour number two. I will confess to everybody, not a single minute of Monday Night Football last night. My apologies. I know that you've come to expect that I will sit here and give you a complete tactical breakdown of Monday Night Football each and every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So for that, we will rely on Marty Caswell.
You didn't miss too much because the Rams were absolutely dominant from just the first play of the game. Dominant performance by offense, defense, special teams. Johnny Hecker had it put on a show last night. Aaron Donald.
Johnny Hecker.
The
punter?
Yeah, the punter.
What did he do?
He was really good.
And he was really good.
Like Mike Seifert's good?
And then and Nick Foles just running for his life all night long.
Bears like, the was worst 5-1 team
Trubisky
ever.
To get in the game.
Bears? Yeah.
They're
well,
atrocious
now that defense
on
is going to go chase Tua Tagovailoa around
right.
the field, too.
Yep.
I did see, though, I did read this morning that Brian Griese.
Oh. Yes.
Blurted out some conversation that he had with Big Energy Nick about how Swaggy Nagy, your boy, the head coach of the Chicago Bears, doesn't seem to understand that they don't have time to run the plays that Swaggy Nagy wants them to run.
This was his exact quote during the game yesterday. Okay, he says, we were talking from Greasy. He goes, we were talking Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I don't know that I don't have time to execute that play call. You know, I'm the one out here getting hit. Sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. So that's something they have to get worked out.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. It's an interesting time of the year for that to be blurted out there on Monday Night Football as Big Nick Energy is getting chased around the football field. Is it Big Nick Energy or Big Energy Nick? Big Nick. I got to be careful here. Otherwise, I'm going to say the wrong thing. When we come back, Dan Shulman, who you'll hear tonight, if you're cruising around, we're carrying the World Series game number 6. And if there's a game number 7, you will hear Dan Shulman. We'll speak with Dan Shulman when we return on Extra.
Ego and FM 103.3.
All right, potential closeout game tonight for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Tampa Bay hoping to stay alive. You can listen to it this afternoon on Extra 1360. You will hear Dan Shulman. He is working with Jessica Mendoza and Chris Singleton. Dan Shulman joining us right now on Extra 1360. Dan, Darren Smith in San Diego, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. How are you doing today?
I am great. Thank you for joining us. Sounding great, as always, and we appreciate it. The Dodgers' philosophy heading into tonight. You know, it's really interesting when you have two games to win one, to win a World Series for the first time since 88, how you approach the first of those closeout games. What are you expecting just in terms of pitching, who they make available, et cetera, with Tony Gonsolin getting the ball to start the game for L.A.?
I think they go for it almost as if it's a game 7. So we know Gonsolin's going to start. I expect them to go deeper with Gonsolin if he's going well. Like, I don't expect 5 batters, 6 batters, an inning and a third, that sort of thing. And whether that means once through the order or more than that, it depends what the lineup looks like for the Rays. But I think they'll go with Gonsolin for a while. I think Alex Wood definitely plays in this game because after Gonsolin, if you bring in a guy like Wood, maybe you get Kevin Cash to make a move or two and take a lefty out, bring a righty in, and then you go back to whether it's Dustin May or one of your, or Gratterall, depending on how deep into the game you are by now. And if they're in the lead or if it's tied, I expect Dave to go, you know, to really go after it and to try to lock it down tonight. Obviously, you feel good about Walker Buehler starting game 7, but I'm sure the Rays would feel good about Charlie Morton and just getting it to a game 7. So I think if there's, you know, any shot for the Dodgers to win it tonight, Roberts really pushes it.
So let me ask you then, Dan, I know this is sort of hindsight now, but game number 2, we see Tony Gonsolin, he gets the start, he gets the ball, I think 29 pitches somewhere in that range, an inning and a third or an inning and two thirds, somewhere in that range. He comes out of the game in the second inning. What was the deal there? Was he limited in game 2? If you're willing to stretch him a little bit longer tonight, as you said, circumstances depending, then what was the strategy behind what it was that they tried to do in game number 2 of the series?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you'd have to ask Dave Roberts himself, obviously, but I think then they were trying to use just as many different guys and really not give anybody a look at the same guy twice. But I think now as the series has gone along, I think Dave Roberts has a better feel for who the guys he really trusts are. And I think what Dustin May did in Game 5 puts him in that group. I think Victor Gonzalez is in that group. I think Gratterall's in that group. I think Alex Wood is in that group. And he's only pitched once in the series, and that was in the game you're talking about, Game 2. So I still think we could see five or six guys tonight. The only difference, I think, is that Gonsolin goes maybe more than an inning and a third. Like, say the Rays have the same lineup. But I haven't seen their lineup yet today. But if Meadows and Lau are at the top, 1-2, then maybe he lets Gonsolin go nine batters. And he brings in a lefty to face Meadows and Lau, because that's a pretty good spot to do it. You might get Meadows out of the game, and you put Lau at a bit of a disadvantage. And maybe somebody like G-Man Choi is the fourth batter. That, to me, is a good spot. So it wouldn't shock me, if that's what the lineup is for the Rays, to see Gonsolin go nine batters, and then Wood, Kolarik, maybe even Gonzalez early, coming in, getting a lefty in there to face Meadows and Lau and Choi the second time around. Then you go back to a righty again. So I still think we'll see a lot of guys, but I think Gonsolin goes more than an inning and a third.
Boy, I do. I really pity you guys in your scorecards having to score these games during the regular season. We're talking with Dan Shulman from ESPN, who you'll listen to a little later on. He will be on the call here on Extra 1360, working with Jessica Mendoza, Chris Singleton. And how about on the flip side? We saw what happened. It's one of the more intriguing storylines that sort of got overshadowed because the series just moved on quickly. But Blake Snell, who won a Cy Young a couple of years ago, he has a no-hitter going into the fifth, and he doesn't finish the fifth. And what your expectations would be for him heading out there tonight getting the ball for the second time in the series?
Yeah, so Game 2, he's nails, as you said, no hitter into the fifth, gets the first two outs of the fifth, he struck out five batters, and then it's walk, home run, walk, single. And the walk and the single were to the guys at the top of the order, Mookie Betts and Corey Seager. And, you know, as you know, as we've all discussed, teams are really hesitant to let guys see the other lineup third time through the order unless there's a good reason to do it. And down 3-2 in the World Series, I'm not sure is a great reason to do it, even if Snell is cruising. And based on what happened to him last time, I don't think they give him that chance. So I think they let Snell see 15 to 18 batters. Again, it depends what the Dodger lineup looks like. But if we assume the bottom of the order is right-handed hitters, then maybe that's a chance for Kevin Cash to take Snell out. Then you bring in a righty to get out of whatever that situation is. Then you bring in your lefty, Aaron Loop, to face guys like Seager and Muncy, whatever that inning is. And then he just goes with his best guys, you know, Fairbanks or Anderson or Castillo, whoever he hasn't used yet. So, like, to me, I don't see a situation where Blake Snell goes six innings. I just don't see it happening. I think we're looking at four or so, depending on how he's doing and depending on where they are in the lineup. I would be amazed when Mookie Betts comes up the third time. I would be absolutely amazed if Blake Snell's on the mound, even if he's going great. I just don't see it happening.
You are as close to this sport as anybody, Dan. Do you find yourself every once in a while just pausing and thinking, wow, that was the Cy Young Award winner not that long ago, and his manager in Game 6 of the World Series would probably be thrilled with a four-inning appearance tonight from Blake Snell?
Yeah, it is different. Yeah, I mean, I was doing the first round. He was pitching against the Blue Jays, and he had gone 5 2/3, one hit, no runs. And, like, there was nobody on base. He got the first two outs of the sixth inning, and they took him out because it was at a spot in the Blue Jay order where four or five of their best hitters were coming up, and they were all right-handed batters. And Snell was fine with it. He knew the plan going in. You know, we've seen this time and time again. So, you know, over the last year or so, I've gotten a little bit more used to it, but it's really come to a head in the playoffs this year, I think. You know, the Yankees had one where Davey Garcia opened, and then they brought in Jay Happ. The Dodgers have had it. The Rays have had it. It does make you raise an eyebrow every now and again, but it's based in math. It may not be the most aesthetically pleasing kind of baseball, but I think right now, if you say to Kevin Cash, do you want Blake Snell to face his 19th batter, or do you want to bring in Pete Fairbanks throwing 100 to face Mookie Betts, especially when Snell's a lefty and Betts is a righty, even though that's not necessarily always the strong side. Now, actually, Betts hasn't hit that well against lefties, but it's just the math. They're just playing the odds. And as you know, analytics departments, front offices are very involved in this kind of stuff. I miss the day when guys like John Smoltz and Jack Morris and Curt Schilling would go out there and just, you know, roar through a lineup to the end of the game. But I don't know why they can't do it as much or as well as they used to, but the game has changed, and I'm not sure we're ever getting back to the way that it was.
And for me, Dan, you know, listen, I think it takes a little bit of getting used to when you're watching some of these postseason series. To be frank, we're not watching a ton of Rays baseball here in San Diego. We've seen the Dodgers a lot, and I'm okay with any of this. I'm like you. I would long for the days of seeing somebody who can go out there consistently give you seven innings. But if this is the way these teams see it, where the Yankees, I thought, got into trouble, that's not something that they did, what we saw out here right at Petco Park. But it seems to me like the Rays and the Dodgers, maybe not to this extreme, but a lot during the regular season and certainly in the postseason, this is sort of how they operated. So this isn't completely foreign to them that we're seeing it on the biggest stage in baseball.
Right. Well, a couple of things, too. You can do more of this stuff in a 60-game season, even during the regular season. I don't think you can do it like crazy over 162 because you're just gonna wear everybody out. But if anybody's going to do it, it's the Rays. And if you want Rays info, you come to the right place. As a Blue Jays announcer, I did 10 Rays games during the season, and I've done every Rays playoff game. I was on the American League side all the way through for ESPN Radio. And this is who they are. You know, they're the team that, as you know, started the opener concept, I guess, 2 years ago in 2018. People thought they were crazy. Like, people were scoffing at it. And then after 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks of them doing it a couple times each time through the rotation, they were saying, hey, maybe there's something to this. And the only reason they did it is because four of their five starting pitchers went down with injuries, and they felt they had to do it. And they said, you know what if we use a hard-throwing righty in the first inning? And it was only against certain teams. The Yankees had a bunch of righties at the top of the order. The Blue Jays did. The Angels did. And so the Rays brought it in against certain teams in certain spots, let a hard-throwing righty, a guy like Ryan Stanek, who they had a couple of years ago, go out there, face five or six batters. Then we bring in Ryan Yarbrough, the lefty, who throws 87, but we start him against the bottom of the order. So if we can get 2.5 turns through the order from him, he faces the bottom three times and the top twice instead of the top three times and the bottom twice. That's it. That's why they started it. And now other teams are doing it, and they're expanding the usage of it and the mindset of it and all that. But I was a little surprised the Dodgers went as heavy in that direction in the playoffs. I thought we might just see Urias start and Gonsolin start and May start. But, you know, they kind of started going in that direction in the first round. And then once you get going in that direction, it's kind of hard to stop. So, you know, you start it, you kind of got to keep doing it. And listen, here they are up 3-2, a win away from winning the World Series. So it's hard to be too critical of it, but we'll see how Gonsolin does tonight.
Speaking of Urias, would you expect, and do you think that he's at all a possibility for Los Angeles out of the bullpen tonight?
Yes, I do. I think they'd rather not use him because they'd rather have him as the emergency plan for tomorrow. Like, if the Dodgers are trailing, Urias is not coming into the game tonight. But if they use, you know, say they use Wood early and maybe they spot in Kolarik, and I don't even know if they're super comfortable with Kolarik, but if there's a spot late in the game, you know, for, again, like Lau and Choi or Meadows and Lau or Kiermaier and Lau, something like that, although Urias has been great against lefties and righties, if there's a spot late in the game where they think, okay, now's the time to put the hammer down, now's the time to really finish it off, I think Urias is in that conversation. Maybe to close, maybe not. I don't think he's in there for two or three innings, but I think he could be in there a little bit tonight if things are going well. If they are not going well, absolutely not. I think he's held back for game seven just in case something goes sideways with Buehler tomorrow.
Do you see an obvious point of advantage for the Rays? Do you see one area where you think, because it's real easy, the Rays are prohibitive underdogs. They were coming into the series. They remain so today. But it's 3-2, which would suggest that this has been kind of close, Dan, as you know. Do you see an area where you think clear-cut the Rays are better than the Dodgers?
Heading into tonight or overall?
Overall, in the series, from how you've seen it unfold through five, yeah.
Yeah, I think, really, and I don't think it's been a huge advantage, but I think at times Kevin Cash has had those three guys down in the bullpen, Castillo, Anderson, and Fairbanks. He knows who his three best guys are. Like, Kevin Cash is never sitting there saying, can I trust this guy? Do I want this guy? He knows who his big three are. And I guess with Aaron Loop, the lefty, he really trusts him as well. So I think he had more certainty in the bullpen and a little bit more of an understanding of how he was going to get through games late in the game. You know, for the Dodgers, it was, can I use this guy 3 days in a row? Do I want Jansen in a high leverage spot? Kolarik hasn't pitched that well. Gonzalez is a rookie, you know. So I think Roberts has found out over the series who he really trusts. I think Cash came into the series knowing who he really trusts. So that, to me, is their advantage. I don't think it's a huge advantage, but I think it's an advantage. But it only plays out if they're in the game after four or five innings. And the Dodgers have been in the lead four times in five games. They've scored first four times, and they've been in the lead like at the fourth or fifth inning four times. So Cash hasn't really been able to roll out, you know, his heavyweights as much as he wants to. Tonight he does, no matter what. I mean, if they lose, they're done. So even if they're down a couple of runs, you're going to see those guys in the middle innings, and then he's going to hope they've got enough gas in the tank for Game 7 tomorrow. But I would think it would be kind of the high-leverage guys in the bullpen where the Rays have a slight advantage.
Dan, sounding great. Thank you for taking the time to join us. We look forward to listening to the broadcast a little later on this afternoon here on Extra 1360. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Appreciate that. Hope it's a good one.
Thank you. That is Dan Schulman, who will be working with Jessica Mendoza and Chris Singleton coming up later. If you're driving around and want to listen to the World Series here on Extra 1360 or in HD radio. Now, just picture that voice in HD radio, everybody. Listen to Dan Schulman, who we sat here and are incredibly envious of. Even Marty's envious of Dan Schulman's voice. I think Marty would want Dan Schulman's voice, which would be kind of weird. But man, think about that in HD coming up a little later on today. That is unbelievable. We're sitting here looking at each other like his voice.
I wasn't even thinking about like it from an envy standpoint. It's just amazing. He has one of the best play-by-play voices I've ever heard. Like I can listen to him and just call anything.
Trade voices with him right now. Jim, would you trade voices with Dan Schulman?
What do you think? Yeah, 100%.
Marty, would you trade voices with Dan Schulman right now?
This is I would tell you. If Dan Schulman told jokes at 2:55 that were given to him by Jim Russell, I would laugh and be in awe of every single joke. It'd be like the greatest joke ever.
You think
ever.
So?
Oh, my gosh.
You think Dan Schulman tells a good joke?
I think every... Absolutely. You're like, wow. I never thought of it that way. How
about
funny.
Him
How
or
clever.
Boog Shambi? Because Boog has a good voice as well.
No, Boog does too, I'm but Dan Schulman, it just...
Yeah, Dan's
that's
an
elite, those are elite vocal cords like, right there. Yeah. Those are elite vocal cords.
Mesmerizing voice.
Yeah, I am. I just wanted to continue the conversation. I don't care what Dan wanted to talk about. Like, just, Dan, what do you want to talk about? How's the family doing? What's going on?
Can you just talk
What'd you eat for lunch
10
today?
Minutes.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You kidding me? I mean, if I owned a radio station, I'd just put Dan Schulman on and just have him talk for 3 hours of the day. Who's not going to listen to that?
Listen, 20-minute sports updates. Dan Schulman.
Back after
16 FM 103.3.
All right, coming up, top of the hour, Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, will join us. Daniel Jeremiah, who apparently just got called out on Twitter by Greg Rosenthal, who is one of our show favorites around here. I don't know what that was about exactly, but Daniel Jeremiah will be here to defend himself coming up at the top of the hour.
Greg Rosenthal, like you, when you watch him on NFL Network or NFL.com and around the league, you know, you think, wow, what a really, really nice guy. Understated, but he's a little bit sneaky. He tweeted out, it's awkward that at Move the Sticks will announce every game of Justin Herbert's Hall of Fame career, knowing he ranked Ross Blacklock, Andrew Thomas, and 17 others ahead of Herbert. So, you know, I love the lists that DJ puts out there.
Oof.
I know, that's pretty rough.
Savage.
Whether it's like he does the mock draft, like what he's hearing, what teams are going to do, but he also does like his top 50 players, the players that he thinks are the best. And apparently he must have had 17 players listed ahead of Justin Herbert.
17 players or 17 quarterbacks?
17 players.
Okay.
Yeah.
Must be weird for Daniel
Jeremiah. If there were 17 quarterbacks ahead of Herbert, we've got a problem.
There are some people who really do not like him.
No, I know.
We talked with one of them yesterday. As I said, it's not like DJ's out there on a limb all by himself. I love Ian Fitzsimmons. Now, I do think Fitzy and Brinson are a little snobby in that they're sort of Southern college football fans, and they hate everything that comes out of the
anything
West Coast.
Anything for the
Pac-12
or the Mountain West?
Exactly.
So they probably dislike Josh Allen.
Pretty much.
It doesn't matter. Jared Goff.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
You
got
hear
it.
The tone. There's a certain disdain in Fitzy's voice when he's talking about the Pac-12.
Right.
It's just like, I'm okay. All right, I got it. I know. You're from the South. All right, we get it. You're from Louisiana, and you went to Alabama. Mm-hmm. We understand. But, you know, it's not like everybody loved Justin Herbert. I mean, he was clearly third on almost everybody's chart. At least third. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any issue with it. Going back to Dan Schulman, though, I will say, though, I'm genuinely curious to see if the Dodgers are going to be tempted to do something like, you know, like, do they, would they think about Kershaw tomorrow? I mean, I just, that's part of why I want to see a game seven also is, do they toss Kershaw out there late in the game just to, you know, to just so they could say he was a part of, I wonder, I really, really do wonder what they're capable of over the next couple of days. Cause I don't think it's all going to be Julio Urias and Alex Wood
today.
I don't know. And it's interesting that Schulman thinks they will use Urias today, that they're going to push mostly in today, save Bueller for tomorrow, but push all in as long as they have a lead or if it's tied. But I do think like that picture that you want to preserve forever. I will tell you this. Well, I do remember Red Sox doing something like this. When the Red Sox came back from 3-0.
Like a ceremonial gesture.
They did. They put Pedro Martinez out there on the mound. Mm-hmm. To sort of tap dance on the grave of the Yankees back in, what year was it, 2004, when they came back from 3-0? Mm-hmm. Just so you can say, hey, listen, we want him. Even though he pitched 2 times already, we want to see him out there. But if they put him out there in a close game in a leverage situation, gosh, wouldn't that be great drama?
Yeah.
Well, we swore we weren't going to do this, but yeah, here comes Clayton Kershaw out of the bullpen. Kind of want to see that. Kind of want to see what would happen in that situation. And maybe he passes the test and you know, he can get rid of that for the rest of his life.
You think they'd rather go ahead and do that than say Kenley Jansen?
Let if him you have two moment. Pitchers left, Clayton Kershaw and yes. Kenley Jansen, mm-hmm. 1-run lead in the ninth inning,
runner
game
on,
seven,
there's a runner
who do you
on,
want?
There's a runner on second base?
Yeah.
Kershaw. 99 of 100 times. Absolutely. Yes. And the last time Jansen's on the mound is the bizarre what happened in on Saturday night.
7-6 game, ninth inning tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Your choices are Jansen.
Kershaw.
Or Kershaw.
No brainer.
Clean inning. Man, that would be amazing drama, though, wouldn't it? I mean, who wouldn't want to watch that? Let's hope we get there.
I know.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, when we return.